There's a very common sense reason gold is pushing to all-time highs right now. Actually, there are several reasons. The cost of goods continues to rise despite interest rate controls by the Fed. Since Jan 21, the cost of living is up 17.9%. The national debt continues to skyrocket, now above $34 trillion, causing many to worry when the House of Cards will come crashing down. A presidential election year that'll have massive implications on the future of this country. All of this adds up to instability and uncertainty, and that's why so many Americans are turning to Birch Gold Group. Have you diversified your savings yet? Secure a portion of them with gold from Birch Gold. Text STRANGE to 989898 and get your free info kit. You'll learn how to convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-sheltered IRA in gold, and it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and tens of thousands of happy customers, you can count on Birch Gold, too. Just text STRANGE to 989898 to claim your free info kit and to protect your savings from uncertainty today.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, following the truth wherever it leads, exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites, revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality, coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
And welcome once again to another episode of Strange Planet. Thanks for sticking me in your ear. We're going to reach out to Warsaw, Poland today and speak with a technical translator, a freelance journalist who has written for the Korean Times, the Taiwan News, the Kiev Post. He's also the author of a sci-fi horror thriller called Euthanizers, and we'll find out about that. But we're going to talk about paranormal Poland and other matters. Adam Borofsky, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, Richard. Thanks for having me again. I'm great.
So, first of all, you know, it is kind of the Christmas season. How do you celebrate Christmas in Poland? Do you have any special traditions?
Oh, yes, we have a very, very special tradition. It's called Vigilia, which is from Vigil, right? Right. It's on the 24th of December when you wait for the first star and you have 12 dishes prepared. Of course, it doesn't have to be 12. And there is a tradition that you wait for a stranger. And if a stranger comes knocking on your door, you are to let them in. Of course, it doesn't really happen, but that's the idea. And we have this special kind of like in church, this wafer, like you know, it's in religious practices that you basically use to wish each other, you know, some whatever you want to wish another person, right? Some kind of well wishes, basically. And for example, in the US, I always compare it to Thanksgiving because it's kind of, in a way, it's similar. Ah. You have the turkey, right? But in Poland, it's the carp. Right. So this is a very, very important aspect of this celebration. And yeah, I think that if American listeners want to imagine what it's like, it's kind of like Thanksgiving, except there is the carp and it's very, you know, family oriented. And the idea is that you wait for this first star because that's when, you know, this that's the moment when you start, basically. And of course,
the Star of Bethlehem.
Yes, that's right. And so that's the first point. That's was very, very important to Polish people in general, I'd say. Yeah, that's how we celebrate it. And yeah, so it's on the 24th in our tradition. The 25th and 26th, we don't really celebrate that much, but the 24th is Vigilia, as we say in Polish, right?
You exchange gifts?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But that's tricky, of course. So some people do this, you know, we have the Christmas tree, which is, I think, actually a German or Austrian tradition.
German, it's brought over to England, yes.
Yes, and so we wait until, you know, the Vigilia is over, and then we exchange gifts. And of course, it's polite to open it in front of people, because, you know, some cultures prefer where you don't do that. We definitely prefer if you do this, if you open. And of course, you are expected, even if you don't like it, you're expected to say, well, it's great, you know, it's without yes, good
that's-
front,
that's
you
the
know?
Tradition every year, I think.
Yeah,
right.
And the yeah, so there, so I'm preparing for this kind of, you know, in my mind mentally, because it's close. And yeah,
I wanted to ask you about a UFO investigator who actually he was British, but he passed away under rather mysterious circumstances in Warsaw in Poland, where you are, Max Spears. I guess it's been over 6 years now. This caused a lot of controversy. He was visiting a friend there, and I know the BBC did a kind of a multi-part documentary series on his death. His mother said she was concerned about him because, she was concerned about his mental health prior to his death, and she believed he got involved with the wrong crowd. Other people, I guess, people that followed Max Spears' UFO work, thought that somehow he was being controlled by extraterrestrial life. What can you tell us about what happened to Max Spears in Warsaw?
Yeah, he died actually not in Warsaw, but close to Warsaw. It's pretty close to in the area where I am. I am in Warsaw, and he died in the city next to Warsaw, basically, right? In Józefów, the city is called Józefów. And so this area here. And it's a really nice area, by the way, so I'm not surprised he would come here. And this story is really profoundly perplexing, because apparently he felt unwell, right? And he started throwing up, and this kind of black liquid came out of his mouth. So, of course, there are many theories as to what happened there. His mother, as you said, she is suspicious of the official version. And I got a call from the BBC. From a BBC journalist, and she asked me if I would be interested in commenting on this, on this story, right? So I said, absolutely, and she was kind enough to drive here to my house, where I had a 2-3 minutes of answering questions. She asked me about the super soldier aspect, whether I thought that Max Spears was a super soldier.
Well, tell us a little bit about that theory, about because he believed, I mean, he claimed to have had out of body experiences, and he used a lot of those sort of to justify some of his conspiracy theories, let's say. But tell me about his belief that he was a super soldier.
Yeah, so he believed that he had special powers, basically, from birth, that he was engineered. And that the question here, which I could go back by the journalist, by the British journalist, whether he could demonstrate the powers. And I said, well, I wasn't there, so I can't verify whether he really was that kind of super soldier that as he claimed. Because what I found strange was that he never actually demonstrated any kind of powers like that. So that was the main point. But yeah, but the idea is that people are engineered either from birth or at some point in their lives. They are abducted or by my labs, military abductions, or by aliens. And they are engineered for whatever reason, usually to perform some kind of espionage or similar things of that nature. So that's the idea behind super soldiers. And personally, I find the idea fascinating, but I don't understand why it's so hard for the alleged super soldiers, right, to demonstrate their powers. So that's what I said in the interview, which of course wasn't very, some groups weren't very happy about it, understandably. But, you know, that's what I thought, because I was speaking not just as myself, I was representing the general Polish community of conspiracy researchers. So I had to keep it, you know, balanced.
Right, of course. I mean, but what do you think? I mean, I know you didn't see any concrete evidence, but what do you think of his claims? And what do you think of the claims by some of his devotees, if you will, that Max Spears was being controlled by extraterrestrial life?
Well, I would ask what kind of control, right? Because there are various theories that mind that the thoughts were inserted into his mind. And what I find interesting is that he was supposedly working on some QAnon-related stuff. I mean, of course, it wasn't called QAnon back then, but in terms of Satanism, in terms of pedophilia, he was supposed to reveal something here in Warsaw, apparently, at a conference. So, and he sent a message to his mother that if something happens to him, please investigate. That was paraphrasing, right? That was the message. So, yeah, I can see why this would be suspicious. And what I would like to know is what kind of materials he was getting ready to present. Where are the materials, right? What was going on to be, what was he going to be talking about? Because he also talked about soul traps, which is an interesting topic to me personally, which of course the idea is that a person gets trapped, you know, after death and recycled, right? So this white light is a trap, and it erases our memories and we go back here to Earth, which is a topic of particular interest to me. So
reincarnation, basically.
Yes, basically reincarnation. Yes, that's the basic idea. So he definitely covered a wide spectrum of topics. There is no doubt. And it's perplexing. It's confounding why you know, he died here. Why did he die here in Poland, in Warsaw, I mean, near Warsaw? And
on the eve of going to release information about pedophilia and child sex.
Exactly.
And so
that's really, really disconcerting. And there is no doubt, Richard, there is no doubt that pedophilia exists. And unfortunately, there is a lot of that in the world. And I would definitely like to know, you know, what was he going to be talking about? But, well, what we do know is that the we don't really know what happened in terms of, you know, no one can verify what happened on the spot when he was at this house with his friend and he started vomiting, basically this black fluid, whatever that was. Apparently, if I remember correctly, the prosecutors said that or concluded that it was pneumonia that killed him. So, right.
And I believe also they said he overdosed on Xanax, which is used for depression.
Yeah, because he had panic attacks. Yeah, definitely. Right. So, and interestingly enough, he was staying with a sci-fi writer. So, yeah, that's an interesting tidbit as well. Right. And the British journalist, if I just may add here, they wanted to speak to that, the woman, but she, of course, did not want to, you know.
Oh, his roommate, the sci-fi writer. Right. She didn't want to weigh in on that.
His friend, not roommate, but his friend, you know.
Okay. The other interesting angle that I guess conspiracy theorists have latched onto is that it took something like 6 days to transport his body back from Poland to England. And his mother was, I don't know if she was prevented from seeing the body, but she was strongly urged not to look at the body because of, I guess, its state of deterioration. So then that again just adds to the mystery, you know, why was she discouraged from seeing the body? Is it really true that, I would imagine, you know, he would have been placed in refrigeration. You know, typically bodies are preserved in a proper manner. However, in this case, she was told, don't look at the body. So that adds another layer. I want to ask you about where you are right now, and you're in a rather large house in Warsaw, and we've known each other for a few years, and we've communicated by email primarily, and you've from time to time updated me on some of the strange things happening in the house, particularly I think in the room you are now. What goes on in your house in Warsaw?
Right. Well, Richard, my house, yes, my house is pretty big. It's divided into two parts. The older part is pre-World War II, 1938. And interestingly enough, there was a swastika on the roof during the war because the Germans were in that part of the house, apparently, because there was electricity there. So there you go. And the second part is kind of from 1970s. And there is this, there's the door that separates the two parts. And what happened after the interview with the BBC crew?
Oh, about Max Spears.
Yes, because it's connected. That's basically, well, after some time when I started hearing strange knocks and noises in the house, which was, I thought, the plumbing maybe or some of the pipes, but no, this is not the case. Everything was in order. So that was the first time I started hearing these strange sounds. And there was no way that this was caused by something rational, I'd say, because I checked everything and there was just no way. The pipes are okay, they were okay, and everything else was in order. So the knocks, the source of which I have no idea where it came from, but it was usually in patterns of three. So three loud knocks, right? It was really interesting because they usually happened when, because I lock one part of the house, right? And they usually happened in this part of the house that was locked, which is the modern part, the more modern part from the 1970s. And the part where I usually stay, and which is the older part, there was nothing there, but I could definitely hear something happening in the other part of the house. But there was nothing was stolen. There was, nothing was nothing of that sort. And besides, I have security, so if something was, someone was walking there, I would have been alerted to that. So there was a definitely a strange correlation here. First this interview, and then after some time, this knocking. I mean, what's going on, right? So
Right.
that
Max
was
Spears
really.
trying to communicate with you from the beyond, perhaps. What, how did, when you say knocks, like someone was knocking on the wall, on the door, on the floor?
Was or actually more like pounding, like bangs, right? Not even knocks, like really, like you would be hitting a wall really,
Right.
like
With
really
your fist.
hard, right? Like I'm here basically, right? Like this pounding on the wall. So not just like not like this,
Right.
but really, really, so more like pounding, banging basically, and in threes. And this was a definite pattern, right? And I actually wanted to record it at some point, but of course, I guess it didn't want to be recorded because I have this theory, or actually it's not my theory. I first heard it when I was watching a documentary about the Skinwalker Ranch of precognitive intelligence. If I can talk about it just for a moment here, basically the idea is that this force, right, this unexplainable force knows what we want to do, like a chess game. So when you want to record it, it knows that you want to do it, and it's not going to let you record it, right?
Right.
So it's called precognitive intelligence, and apparently the first time they recorded that they noticed this phenomenon was in Skinwalker Ranch when they wanted to record, use cameras to record various phenomena, and it turns out they couldn't do it. So that's when I thought about the knocks and how it didn't want me to record it for some reason, that's what I thought about, right? This is the some kind of intelligent force that's kind of playing around. That was my impression.
I want to ask you about there's some a forest near where you are right now, and
Yeah.
you tell the story of going for a run with
Yeah, I
dogs.
that was
Something.
after.
Let me just kind of set it up here for people. This has to do with, I don't know if we call this a time shift or experiencing an alternative reality, but it just happened like in a flash of light. Tell us what happened as you went through a run in the woods.
Right. Well, first of all, I completed my internship at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs here in Poland, where I translated things. And then I kind of, at a certain point, I got into this inner rage. I just, at the state of the world, I mean, at that point, I didn't really believe in the paranormal. I was kind of like, yeah, it's an interesting story, but I wasn't really into it. But I knew about this force, the Demiurge, right? The supposed trickster, as I call him or it, a cosmic gaslighter that tricks people or punishes people or does all these strange things.
Well,
So I was running.
some people would refer to him as Satan.
Or Satan, yeah. But I kind of there is a kind of difference to me. But anyway, I was running in this forest, pretty, pretty close to where I am, because it kind of, you know, unwinds when I basically, when you do it, it makes you feel better. So I keep running. And in my mind, I keep hurling abuse, so to speak, of this demiurge. Like I say, you're fake, you're a joke, there is nothing, you know, you're just, you know, basically all the other kind of stuff. And at some point, Richard, I just saw this flash, this white flash. And I can't even put it into words. I mean, it just happened, right? And I was in this elevator, and I knew instinctively, I knew I was in an alternate reality, Seoul, right, the capital of South Korea. And there was this rectangular mirror in front of me. And I saw myself. I knew it wasn't some kind of consciousness transfer or some kind of like this kind of stuff. I knew it was more like a Kafkaesque metamorphosis, that I kind of got changed somehow. And I was standing there as this Korean woman, Korean American, because I didn't speak Korean, but I definitely, I knew I was Korean American. I just had this awareness.
Stop you there. Let me just see if we understand this. So you're running through the woods, you're cursing yes. the cosmic gaslighter, as you call him, or
yeah, in my mind, I'm absolutely, I run just, you know, unwind. And I, in my right. mind, I kind of taunt him, curse, you know, kind of like this.
And then all of a sudden there's a flash as you're running, flash.
Yeah, I don't hear it. I don't hear it. It's not like lightning or anything. I don't hear it, you know, because there are pine trees around me, mostly right. pine trees. And I don't hear it. It just happens.
And then all of a sudden you're transported and you're in an elevator, and you intuitively, you understand that you're in Seoul, Korea, where you've worked.
Alternate Seoul. And I knew I was turned into this Korean American woman, because I saw myself in this mirror in front of me, like in an elevator, right? The doors. It was this mirror. And there was a woman next to me, to my right, and she spoke flawless American English. And she asked me about some board meeting, the board meeting. I said, and I was like, okay, let's go. I didn't know why I said that, right? Okay, let's go. And I had this voice that was definitely not my voice like now, right? There was definitely an American accent, but it was a female voice, like corresponding with, you know, how I was looking, right? And I had no idea what was going on. I just kind of said it. And then several seconds later, right, this woman was looking at me just normally. Again, flash, and I was back in the forest. And I was just like, you know, what the hell happened? I couldn't process that. I'm just standing there.
You must have stopped running at this point. And just
Yeah, of course I did.
What was going through your mind? Did you think, did I just have a stroke? Did I just pass out? What did you think happened?
I had no idea, Richard. I had no idea. This was like so many stimuli at the same time. I was just standing there and I was like, what's going on? I mean, I just had some really profound experience that really shook my, you know, my, this whole disbelief in the paranormal. And I had this idea in my mind, don't know where it came from, that this was the demiurge, or however you want to call this force.
Cosmic gaslighter.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That basically wanted to taunt me, because I was taunting it in my mind. So it taunted me back, so to speak, taught me humility by showing me, okay, you're so clever. Here's what this is, right? So that's how I saw it. And then some years later, I saw this Olympian, this Korean Olympian, right? The photograph. And I said to myself, wait a second, that's exactly, you know, that's exactly the same appearance. And I was like, this is probably the demiurge, this force showing me this. And I was like, I couldn't believe it myself. I just, the synchronicity, but it just popped into my mind. When I saw that, I knew that was definitely connected. And that was the demiurge, or this cosmic gaslighter, playing games with me, showing me, you know, okay, you're so clever, here it is.
In other words, this Korean Olympian that you saw, was she Korean American, do we know?
Yes, she is Korean American, definitely. I don't want to mention her name. I don't want to do that. But yes, she is definitely Korean American. So
cosmic gaslighter took your consciousness and for a few fleeting moments inserted your consciousness inside the body of
my consciousness, or maybe somehow transported me. I'm not sure exactly. I felt like it wasn't really a consciousness transfer. I felt like some kind of Kafkaesque metamorphosis took place, right? Which is theoretically, I mean, it's a ghost against all laws of physics that we know. That's why it's paranormal, because, you know, you can't explain it. But the way I see it is, because I was taunting this entity so much, in my mind, then this entity responded, you know, okay, you're so clever, I'm going to teach you a lesson. That's how I see it, right? Because this, the way I see this, the cosmic gaslighter, what it does, it tells you, it takes you to some really, to experience something completely out of your normal element, right? Something that you would normally experience. And it does it because A, it wants to taunt you, it wants to punish you, it wants to teach you a lesson. So it's kind of not exactly like Satan. That's why I kind of differentiate between Satan and, you know, this kind of entity. And I found it fascinating ever since, right? That's why I started writing my novel. That's why I started investigating or getting into this, delving into alternate realities, right? Because there was just no explanation. And it just happened. And this kind of experience, this kind of profound experience, it never repeated itself. So the way I
stopped cursing the cosmic gaslighter.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I stopped cursing the cosmic gaslighter because the way I felt it, like, of course, there were no words, but the way I felt it was that this was like a message, right? Okay, so this is for you. Don't do it again.
Got it. Basically. Okay, we're going to take a time out, Adam. We'll come back and discuss more of Poland Paranormal. Adam Borowski, freelance journalist. Stay with us.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
And we are back with Adam Borowski, freelance journalist, technical translator, and his, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can access the sci-fi horror thriller he's written called Euthanizers. And this next story is has to do with a friend of yours, and it involves a chandelier and something, well, we have a name for it in the West called, it's called the old hag syndrome, but you have a different name for it in Poland. What is it?
In Polish, you would call it strzyga, which I know it's a very hard to pronounce for foreigners, but in Polish, we call it strzyga. It's the same thing. It's basically usually an old woman, that a demon of sorts, that comes to you and sits on your chest, and it terrorizes you, right? Sometimes you see it, sometimes you don't see it. And it's definitely present in Slavic folklore. And we call it strzyga, that's the name. So the old hag, it's basically the same thing, right? Because old, of course, hag is an old woman, right? That doesn't really look very, not very pretty. So in this case, it's the same thing. And of course, it's connected with the Polish and probably with Russian folklore, which are, you know, many times our stories and myths and legends are similar. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's originally from Russia. But the idea was, what happened here with this old hag. I have a friend who lives in southern Poland, in the city there, in the town there. And she is mostly, you know, she lives there most of the time. She doesn't really travel that much. And at one point, she told me about this that there was she has this chandelier, right? That she is in her apartment. And she said it started kind of shaking. It was kind of when she was going to sleep. And she felt this force, right? This pressure on her chest. And at that point, she screamed and she said, you know, F off, basically. She, of course, used the Polish word, but I can say in Polish, but I don't think it matters, right? Basically, in Polish, we are really creative with curse words, by the way.
Okay.
I recommend it a lot. Yeah. So basically, and there was her son was in the apartment as well, and her son is definitely not some kind of, you know, woo-woo person, so to speak. And he confirmed that, yeah, that there's definitely, she screamed that something was attacking her. And she is confident. She is absolutely convinced that was the kind of this old hag came to her. And the first it manifested itself as this, you know, the chandelier started moving around or shaking. And then it was sitting on her chest and she felt this pressure. And she felt this need. She felt this instinctive a need to scream and say, you know, get off me. I mean, she used very harsh language, but of course, I don't want to do that here. But basically, the message was, get off me. And apparently, this force, there was some hissing, and this force left her. And so that was a, you know, because I know her so well, so I know it's, I know she's not, she doesn't make stuff up, okay? She said
it,
that
it was happened. Hissing at her. It was hissing.
Yes, it was hissing like some kind of, like it was annoyed or disappointed or angry that, you know, that my friend didn't want to be in the presence in this of this.
Right. Did it leave any marks on her? Did it scratch her or leave any bruises?
Yes, very small marks, kind of like a hand would leave, like a very small claws, but very, very small marks, right? Nothing major that, you know, you could, not like some alien abductees, you know, are left with major marks sometimes. No, just small marks that claws would make, really, but really small claws, like a hen, I guess, or something similar, right? A similar animal that would... against your chest. So yeah, but she was definitely telling the truth, and the way she was explaining it, the way she was talking about it, she was shaking basically. So you could feel the emotions. So that was really interesting to me. And I even thought about recording maybe EVPs, and next time I go there, I might do that. You know, I think it's a great idea to record it and to see what happens.
Did it only happen the one time?
Yes. And apparently she was, pretty emotionally shaken at that time, which could explain why this manifested itself. Because as far as I know, these entities, Strzyga, old hags, they react to it. So they sense it, right? They were like predatory beings and they sense it. So they might have been attracted to her and maybe wanted to harvest that energy. That's possible. Yeah, so this is definitely something I want to get, you know, I might record an EVP there or something similar, of course, if she lets me. But again, she is very down to earth at the same time. She's open to various possibilities, to various, you know, phenomena, but she's very down to earth. When she told me that, I knew there was something to it and it would have to be potentially investigated. Yeah.
Well, you belong to a paranormal investigation group in Poland. Is it on the edge of the unknown?
Yeah, it's on the edge of the unknown. And as the name tells, you know, everyone, it's basically the idea is that people write to us and we, you know, verify their reports. That's the idea, right? It doesn't happen that much at this point, but it happened more in the past because now everyone has their own life and we just don't have time for it. But there is we definitely had interesting reports. Some, you know, because what you need to do, Richard, of course, as you know, sometimes people write who have various mental problems and so on. So you need to make sure that when you go somewhere in the field, so to speak, you need to make sure that you're not wasting your time. So we developed a pretty good strategy how to do that. And there were some good stories and some good interviews we had. And yeah, very interesting turns of events, so to speak. We can talk about that.
Let's talk about one of the investigations you did that involved a hospital. I guess the patients were mainly Jewish who had mental health issues.
Yeah, so I'd like to explain the history first, right? So there is a hospital here, it was at this point, here near Warsaw. first, that your listeners need to understand the area near Warsaw is really like a wooden area. There's a lot of pine trees, maple trees, and all this stuff. It's a really nice area. So there is this town here not far from Warsaw where you have the abandoned at this point hospital. Yes, it was the hospital for mentally ill Jews before the Second World War. And of course, during the Second World War, as you know, when the Nazis, German Nazis entered Poland, they started experimenting. First, there was the T4. T4 was basically eliminating life unworthy of living, right? Unworthy of life. So T4 action, that was the name of it. And of course, the personnel, the staff at this hospital was asked to, well, get rid of the Jews, obviously. And in protest, the personnel, the staff, they killed themselves. Cyanide pills,
rather than do it.
Jewish yes, rather
they decided to kill themselves.
To kill themselves, they didn't want to participate. They didn't want to take part in this. And after that, you had the Lebensborn there. Now, Lebensborn was an interesting organization, set up by Himmler, Heinrich Himmler, in 1935. And the idea was because, you know, on one hand, the Nazis said, well, Slavs are subhuman, as they said. But on the other hand, they said, well, but there is a lot of Aryan types in Poland. So what do we do about it? Well, they must be our descendants of Germans, right, of the Germans. So what they did, they kidnapped children here from Poland to Germany to be Germanized. Of course, the ones they saw as racially desirable, as they call it. And houses like Lebensborn, the buildings that, you know, the centers, as they called them, basically served two purposes. One, they evaluated the local children, if there are Aryan types or not, should they be Germanized or not. And the other type was, of course, the other purpose was, well, they took SS men and, of course, local women, and the obvious happened, right? So there was obviously a breeding program, right? So they took blonde women and SS men, and because they wanted to create or expand the master race, right? So right. That was the idea. So, okay, so that went throughout the war. That went on throughout the war. After the war, interestingly enough, and terrifying at the same time, bodies were being found around this hospital, you know, because obviously they were, you know, the Jews and other patients who were shot and killed and maybe even gassed. I wouldn't be surprised. And after some time, there was normal hospital. I mean, for some time, there was normal hospital there after the war. Then it burned down. Nobody knows why, but it just burned down. So we went there to record because, not exactly burned down. There was some of it is left, like the structure is left, right? And you can still see when you enter that, when you walk into that building, there are still some very strange drawings on the walls. Like you can tell this was a mental hospital, Richard. I mean, you can just look at the walls.
Adam, I'm going to jump in here because we're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll continue to discuss this investigation on the Edge of the Unknown paranormal group, this former mental hospital that... predates the Second World War, and of course, all of the atrocities that took place. We'll get into that in more detail on the other side. Don't go away.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
And we're back with freelance journalist, technical translator, Adam Borofsky. Okay, so back to the this mental hospital. After the war, they started to find bodies around the hospital. It was functioning
around the grounds, the grounds of the hospital, right? So not even the hospital itself, but around the hospital, right?
It was functioning as a hospital again. Then there was a fire.
Yes, there was a fire. There was a fire in the 90s. I said it burned out. Not exactly. I mean, the structure itself is intact, and you can walk into the hospital, and you can still see very, very weird drawings on the walls. Really strange drawings. So you can tell this was a mental hospital, Richard. There is no doubt about it. So we went in there with the local journalists here, right in Poland, mainstream journalists. We went into this building.
Well, why did they ask you to go in? What was happening that precipitated your being invited as a paranormal group?
Yeah, because we had a program here in Poland, an online, you know, so that where we talked about it, right? It was pretty popular. So they were in charge of the, they were in charge of that program, basically. So even though the topic was paranormal, the platform was mainstream.
But were people experiencing paranormal events, and that's why they asked you to come and investigate?
That's right. That's right. They went in, that's why they asked us to investigate, yes.
What were they experiencing?
Well, that's the interesting part, because they were total skeptics at first. And then when we were walking around this place, they suddenly said, we don't want to go in there. And I said, wait, what are you talking about? You're skeptics. You never said you're, you know, that's real to you. But apparently something happened to them and they didn't want to get in and walk into this building. But they did eventually.
Well, what happened? Do we know?
Yeah, so of course, we went in there with them, me and another person from the organization. And we were just recording, because they were recording us. Basically, we were talking about this building, the history, and, you know, all that stuff. And that's when one of the journalists, he basically jumped back and said, I see an orb, right? He said, I see an orb and some kind of apparition right there. And he was terrified. So it started with an orb, and then there was this apparition. And of course, we didn't see anything, but he recorded it. And he said, take a look. And yes, there was an orb and some kind of strange apparition, like a shadow person that was definitely there. And they were shaken up by this. They were shaken up because it happened live, right? We were recording this. It was this guy with a camera, and he jumped back with this. It was pretty small, this camera. And he jumped back and said, what the hell, basically. Like, and this guy was a skeptic. He wasn't into that stuff, but there was something.
So you
about
saw a picture.
Place.
Was it a video of an orb? A still photograph?
Yeah, it was a video, definitely.
Can you describe? You saw it. What did it look like?
Well, first there was an orb just going up, like shooting up like this, right? Like the sky. And then there was this apparition, like a shadow person, more like a shadow person. Like, you could see this blackish silhouette in the distance. But it was like a silhouette watching. It wasn't like just passing by. It was like watching what's going on. So when we saw that, well, that was definitely a chilling experience, Richard, when we saw that. And I asked them, listen, you're professionals. Can it be some kind of malfunction, some kind of glitch? They said, no way. Because this guy, he jumped back. It was live, right? It was real time. We saw this. We were right there.
You didn't see the orb as when he saw it.
No,
when you looked at the video.
Yeah, we didn't see the. Yeah, we had to look at in the video.
And let's take some time and talk about the orb itself. I mean, how big was it? Was it just like a big soap bubble? What did it look like?
It was in the middle of the screen, right in front of this guy, and between us, right, because he was filming us. So like, he was between us and him. It was in the middle of the screen, and it was pretty big, and it shot upwards, and it disappeared. So it was out of nowhere, and it shot upwards.
When you say it was pretty big, what are we talking, like the size of a grapefruit, a bowling ball, a basketball? How big?
Basketball would be my assessment. Yeah, I would say it's a basketball-sized, orb. And we didn't see it. That was the weird part. So we had to look at the video to see it. Really, really strange, Richard. And then this silhouette, but this silhouette was more behind us. It wasn't like the orb. It was looking at what's going on. And it was like, it was assessing what's happening, discerning or trying to find out where our intentions were, right? And then it just kind of faded away, basically like disintegrated. That's what I mean. It was like standing there, and then we just kind of just gone. Just
any
like
other,
that, right?
Any other unusual events in the hospital?
Well, that was the main one. And this eerie feeling, this strange foreboding presence, right? This feeling, like the journalist said, that there was something very weird about this place, very, very off, not something that they expected they didn't expect to feel that way. And of course, you can say, well, yeah, sure, but you were kind of programmed mentally, right, when you walked into this place. Well, not exactly, because they were definitely they were skeptics.
Before you went there, though, people were experiencing something because you were invited to come in and investigate. What were they experiencing before exactly?
Right, because Richard, what needs to be understood is that there are people living in this area pretty close to that building. And this area is pretty secluded. So the locals were talking about strange sounds, strange lights, and some apparitions as well. So because you can basically, you can drive up to this building very close, right next to it. So, and the people live in the area, very, very close as well. So they said, listen, we are hearing something coming, like abnormal voices, like demonic, even in nature, right? Very loud, malicious, not like, not friendly, but they could tell they were like terrible demonic voices or some kind of screams, right? And that's why they started talking about it. And eventually it reached the mainstream, it reached us. And we said, okay, let's see what's going on. So we talked to the locals and they confirmed, yes. Unfortunately, nobody had anything, you know, no recording, but there was no doubt, because you can tell, right? After a while of doing this, you can tell whether someone's lying or not. I could tell this was real. They weren't kidding. They were terrified of whatever was happening in this place. And given the history of this place, Richard, given how crazy and tragic the history of that place is, I'm not surprised. The energy there was, you know, at some point I thought energy fields, whatever, you know, I thought, nah, that's just, you know, nonsense. But no, it's not. It's, I could feel it. And that was like, you could touch it basically. Like it was very, very palpable. So this is definitely when something tragic happens, it imprints itself, right? Whether it's a crime or this kind of tragic event, you can sense it. And we could sense it. And not just us, but the journalists who are skeptical, they sensed it as well. So definitely, yeah, that's basically the story, right?
All right. Adam, tell us about your novel, your sci-fi horror thriller, Euthanizers. What's it all about?
Right. Well, as I said, it's inspired by my profoundly perplexing, and to say the least, experience with this cosmic gaslighter. It's about, well, it's about people in general who live in dystopian dimensions, and they observe, and for various means, they observe other dimensions better, that are better off, and they basically usurp or take over the lives, they cross over, and they take over the lives of their doubles, right? So the idea is pretty well known, but I put my own spin on it. And they always make sure that there is not a drop of blood left, because they don't want to, you know, make a mess, and they don't want anyone to detect them that way. So their ritual is usually that they then throw the body of the double through the portal back to where they had come from. Basically, they call others who are more fortunate dimensional one percenters, right? That's how they refer to people who are in a better position, in a better world. And the idea is simple. They do not understand why they can't have someone else's life, so their double's life, who are better off, who are more fortunate, so who are lucky. So they say, listen, we want this life and we're going to get it, right? So they have this ritual where first they scan, basically they scan infinity and they look at dimensions and they find the best dimension for them, their best double for them. They investigate, they observe this double. Of course, the double has no idea because they do it from their dimension. They learn everything they can about this double, mannerism, passwords, whatever, you know, whatever is needed to pose as this other, as their counterpart. And of course, number three is they cross over and they get rid of the double. So that's the idea here. And of course, it's connected with the Demiurge or the cosmic gaslighter, because my main character is approached by the Demiurge, who wants him to write this book, Euthanizers, because the Demiurge wants the energy from that book, because when people read that book, the energy will transfer to the Demiurge. So the Demiurge inspires, so to speak, the main character to write this book. And the Demiurge, of course, does it in unexpected ways, as you can imagine. And of course, this connects to the soul traps, right? Because the Demiurge promises the main character that, listen, if you do this, you are not going to be sent into a soul trap, or I'm not going to try to trick you, because the Demiurge can't just do it. God will not allow it. The Demiurge needs to trick people, right, to get into the soul trap, to go into the light. So the Demiurge says, listen, if you write this book, I'll help you get it published, right? Even as your double, because there is a double who is a billionaire. So you will become this person. You'll publish it. And as a reward, you will not go into the light, or I will not try to trick you to go into the light. And the main character knows at some point, realizes that there is no way that the Demiurge is not going to win this. So the main character says, okay, this is a Faustian bargain, like a deal with the devil, but I'll do it. And so that's the idea in a nutshell, right? I'm still working on the synopsis. I know it's maybe chaotic in places, but I'm very, very happy with the direction. And I think it's going to be a great book, about 90,000 words overall. And there are still, of course, finishing touches, right? The synopsis, for example, which is a really tough part, actually, to write, you know, the proper synopsis. But I'm confident that this is going to be a great book, and mostly and because of total strangers. I have this, I'm fortunate, I have test readers who are total strangers who do not sugarcoat. And they said, this is a unique idea, the way you put it together. And we really think it can do great. So I'm counting on it, and I'm working on it.
We'll see it soon on Amazon and in good books everywhere. Euthanizers, Adam Borofsky, technical translator, freelance journalist. If people want to contact you, how do they do that?
They can via email, for example, Facebook or LinkedIn. Maybe email is going to be the best way here, because in my experience, so when people write emails, they usually mean business. So maybe.
Okay, what's the email address?
Adam.Borofsky, right? Maybe I can spell it out. Maybe it's going to be easier by my last name. What do you think, Richard? Maybe it's better to. Borofsky 1985 at gmail.com. So if anyone knows, you know, publishing contacts or has useful advice in terms of publishing, I welcome your contact. I welcome your messages. I read them all. And thanks to you, Richard, actually, I got a few interesting messages from my previous appearances on your show. So thanks for that. It's definitely helping. I welcome anyone to reach out to me, and I reply to all messages, to all emails.
Adam.Borofsky, 1985 at gmail.com. Adam.Borofsky, Borowski. Adam.Borofsky, 1985 at gmail.com. Adam, always a great pleasure. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Richard. All the best to you, and happy holidays to you and your family as well.
A new Richard Sarrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.